Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for KER Politics, talking with my favorite psychologist, PhD psychologist friend, John Huber. John lives in Austin, Texas, and because of his work in the various hospitals surrounding the cities of Austin, John is very, very familiar with what's going on with the situation with the immigrants. He brings up the fact that a lot of diseases, which used to be eradicated in the United States, are being brought into the country, and he also brings up the dangers to some of the people that the human traffickers are bringing into the country. These people are coming in primarily, according anyway, to Ted Cruz, who we posted a video with Senator Cruz yesterday, and he claims that all of this is being caused primarily by the loopholes in our immigration laws. I would have to agree with that. The fact of the matter is, we have gotten to the point on the Texas border where, because of the human traffickers, because of the loophole that states if you have a child, you can't be thrown out or what have you, a lot of folks are taking advantage of that loophole, and the children are actually being, in many instances, put in grave, grave danger. John, along in the area of Texas, because of what you have seen, talk about human trafficking.
The coyote who was involved in a rollover accident and 12 or 13 people were killed, that he was driving them across the border and running down the highway trying to evade the ICE and immigration police, border patrol. And it's devastating. These people, they're just trying to, and I understand, trying to have a better life and make a better world for themselves. At the same time, there are, you know, very bad people that are benefiting from this, from the drug runners that are hauling kids around with the drugs, so that there's like a shield. And to a statement that came out of Mexico this past week out of the Mexican press saying that they have confirmed that people in Mexico are selling their kids to some of these people coming across the border to increase the likelihood that they won't be deported if they get caught.
You know, I find that to be absolutely amazing. I mean, what can you say about parents? I know this is kind of off. I mean, this is an obvious point that would be made by someone who lives in a very civilized situation. But what can you say about parents like that? That is just amazing to me. I guess maybe they would rationalize it by saying that, well, these people are looking to get their kids into an environment that gives them a better situation. Two trains of thought on this whole deal, John. One of them is, as Ted Cruz says, we have to change the laws, we got to take the loopholes out, and that's the only way that we can effectively basically protect these people. The Democrats are simply doing nothing more than saying how bad things are on the border, and it's all the U.S. officials' fault. Don't blame anybody else. And that the only solution to this from a humanitarian standpoint is open borders. Now, what I find really interesting, John, about that is so many people agree with that. Why would they do it?
They're uneducated. They don't understand the seriousness and the difficulty of crossing across those deserts, you know, on foot, and the hardships that are there. The human trafficking, the abuse, the rape of individuals coming across, you know, at the hands of these coyotes who are supposed to be helping them, they're clueless. And part of it is they don't want to know the truth. Just like AOC came down and she toured one of our detaining camps there.
Let me just stop you just for a second. It's my understanding she didn't tour the camp. She just kind of looked at it from outside the fence.
That's what has come out, exactly. But she claimed the other, and it's funny because earlier this year she talked about, you know, when there's a moral objective, she doesn't have to tell the truth if she's got a moral goal. And to me, if you can't tell the truth, your morality's gone out the window. It doesn't matter how how grand or how moral you think your goal is, you've already broken that morality by manipulating a line for that whole thing. So it's pretty disturbing. And, you know, it's funny how someone go from being a bartender to making national policy, and she doesn't even understand ethics and moral codes, as well as, you know, the process of how to go about making laws. And it's pretty disturbing.
Well, there's no question about that. What's going on in national politics today is very, very disturbing. John, I wanted to ask you another question. I had a psychologist, PhD psychologist from Manhattan on the show last week, and we discussed a little bit the psyche of some of the Democratic candidates right now. Now, this gal also happens to be, I believe, pretty conservative. She's a bit of a follower of my friend David Horowitz, who is very definitely a conservative. And I'd like to get your views on some of the Democratic candidates. Do you think any of them are particularly showing as being potentially strong leaders for our country, strong leaders who adhere to the principles of, I guess I would have to use common sense and morality? Any comments on that?
Well, I don't see any that even appear to be leaders within their own party. I mean, we could argue Joe Biden, but the issues there are coming out about his own family and own, you know, the drug issues within his family and how he's allowed some of that to continue on. And I don't think anybody in the Democratic Party is an outright leader for that whole party at this point. I think it's pretty disturbing. And then you turn around and realize that they're pandering to the lowest common denominator. And there's a lot of people in this country, whether they want to believe it or not, that the last 2 years have been incredible for them. Their economy, their spending cash has increased. You know, they're getting better jobs. The economy has come together after our last administration said we're going to have to get used to 1% or less GDP growth forever, that there's no way to change that, and there must be some kind of magic button. And it you know, when you got somebody that is so awful, and all they do is spend time trying to tell you how awful somebody is, but our economy keeps going, and our world is actually getting better. I'd really like to see one of the Democratic candidates stand up and actually tell the American people what they really love about this country, because I don't think they can.
You know, you make a really interesting point. I was doing a number of editorials yesterday on the 4th of July, because this country is very, very important to me for many, many reasons. And I would have to say that the platform of the Democratic Party right now, for some reason, is truly, truly dealing with the negative aspects of the United States and giving alternatives. And giving alternatives, quite frankly, that are simply, number one, immoral, and number two, totally not feasible from any type of sensible economic standpoint and what have you. I don't understand how we can even consider them, John, to be part of the political process in the United States, because their ideas are so damn different. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a real quick commercial break here. I'm going to be back chatting with John Huber about the rationale of, or apparent rationale of, the Liberal Party. Stick around. I'm going to be right back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Okay, welcome back in discussion with John Huber. Now, I want to give Dr. Huber a little bit of airtime here to talk about his nonprofit, because in my opinion, through his nonprofit, he's doing some really great work for kids, for people who fall into the category of mental illness, et cetera, et cetera. Nonprofit is called Mainstream Mental Health. John, tell us about it.
Well, Mainstream Mental Health is out there, and we're trying to destigmatize mental health. We believe that so much of mental health could be affected positively if we actually weren't afraid to talk about the issues that happen, you know, in our homes and in our daily lives. But somehow, you know, whether it's the culture of the military that thinks, you know, military personnel are broken and a detriment to everybody if they report feeling upset or sad or anything like that, that, or whether the old culture of you hide somebody who has, for example, a cognitive impairment, like we used to call mental retardation. We don't call it that anymore. But if all of a sudden people could start sharing and this world became less fearful of mental health, it's not a possession. It's not demons going after your family. There's actually things that are going on psychologically, physically, biochemically, and we can interfere with that and keep that process from sometimes going all the way to fruition. I think there's a lot of advantages to not being afraid of mental health. And the reality of it is we all deal with it every single day, whether you're having to pick up somebody's workload at your work, whether on Thanksgiving, instead of having Thanksgiving lunch, it's now 3:30 or 4 o'clock because Uncle Bill can't get to the house by then because he's drank too much last night. You know, whatever it is, we're all having to deal with those repercussions. The more we can talk about it, the better we can deal with it, the better we can interfere with its normal progression and slow it down at the very least, and at the very best, stop it from happening altogether.
You know, Doc, I want to say one thing. I have a good friend in Bellingham, Washington, who is also a PhD psychologist, and we were chatting, I guess, three days ago about the situation in Bellingham. A lot of homeless people in Bellingham. And he was saying that what seems to be going on here, I mean, it's not a huge city, but for the size of the city, it's really frightening how many street people and how many homeless people there are. I mean, we have kids in the city adjoining where my wife and I live that are actually living in their parents' cars. I mean, it's a pretty sad situation. But what my friend is saying is, he said, I was interviewed to do some intakes for a new facility that the city of Bellingham is proposing to build. And what it is, in a nutshell, is a city, or not a city, but a group of structures that is able to house, let's say, pick a number, 150 people on a temporary basis. And as I understand from what I've read in the local papers, that there's going to be absolutely no psychological help, no mental health issues being going to be addressed in that particular facility. And as Kathy has said numerous times, the main cause in America, based on her experience with mainstreaming, is the fact that people are not willing to realize that mental health in the United States, the state of mental health in the United States, is very, very conducive right now to mass homelessness. And as you brought up in terms of some of the stuff that your foundation is doing, that you simply have to recognize people, I guess I should say, simply have to recognize that most of the folks on the streets, whether they're living on the streets, whether they're spending their time on the streets, which I guess is synonymous with living, is these are people who have very serious psychological problems, whether it's addiction problems or what have you. They're not able to function as normal human beings, and so our society has created environments like we have in Seattle, Washington, Portland, Oregon, and other areas. Comment a little bit on that, if you would, and how that fits in with the discussion of your foundation.
Well, it is very key to a lot of it. I mean, we have veterans that are living homeless on the streets because of mental health issues, you know, reliving their experiences in the battlefield every day, every night. And, you know, the reality of it is, in America, you have the right to refuse medical treatment. And some of these people just don't want to be on medications. Some of them actually enjoy the quote unquote freedom that they have living on the streets, because then they're not tied and bound by you know, normal constraints, a 9-to-5 job, for example, or if they want to drink, they can go scrounge up some money and drink. They don't have to worry about what a spouse might say or whether they're going to irritate their kids, that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of perceived choice on the individual level. At the same time, is that choice or is that the mental health issues that are going on? Then you add and compound the fact that mental health, you can't be mentally healthy if you're not physically healthy, and you can't be physically healthy if you're not mentally healthy, because they intertwine so much. So there's medical problems with these individuals as well as the mental health problems. And it's by building a shelter and not addressing both the medical and the mental health, you're just putting a Band-Aid on it, and makes the city fathers feel, oh, well, I'm holier than thou. Look what I've done to help these people. And, you know, maybe that is true. I mean, I know police officers in my own town here in Austin, Texas, and surrounding towns, who will see, you know, on nights when we're 10 degrees and people are potentially able to freeze to death here in Texas, that they go and arrest some of these homeless people and throw them in the drunk tank, saying they're public intox. And then, you know, they let them go in the morning once they sober up, kind of thing. And it's just to help those people make it through the night because the weather's so horrible. It's not because they're really there, but they make up an excuse because they're humans too. And they know that if all the dominoes lined up in the right way, they could be the person on that street corner. And that's the reality of it. And we got to take care of mental and physical health, not just giving them shelter.
You know, John, one of the questions I would have for you as an expert in this particular area is, it strikes me that the liberal aspect of our political universe really is diminishing the fact that there is so many mental health issues among the homeless, and they're not willing to address them. I don't understand why that's the case. I mean, it's great to have people like Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez go down to the border and visit on a cursory basis the centers for, say, processing some of the Mexicans, et cetera, et cetera. Not even going inside the fences of these particular centers, but to basically say this is all the fault of the United States. It's not. I mean, yes, it is, but it's not all the fault of the Republicans or what have you. Ladies and gentlemen, specifically you, CFS, and you, Out of the Box, what do you guys think about this? Interesting segment, huh?
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for KER Politics. Got Josh Philip on the line with me right now. No, I have to tell you, the chaos theory that's going on right now in politics in the United States, which is the subject of my first discussion with Josh, is really interesting. Every single day we have something going on that is making the United States, specifically Donald Trump, because he's in charge of the United States, making him look bad. I mean, we started out with this. I can't go into each example, but let me just show you what I have found is the progression of what's going on. Even before Trump took office in January of 17, the Democrats were already talking about impeachment. Now, they couldn't get him in the free election, but they are trying to turn that around by making him the most popular, unpopular individual in the universe. We started out with impeachment law because of the Foreign Emoluments Clause of the Constitution. Then the next thing was impeachment because of their allegations that he is a white supremacist. And then we went into the alleged collusion of Trump with Russia during the 2016 election. And then, of course, we went into the investigation of him obstructing justice. Now, today we have another interesting thing going on. I actually started yesterday. And it really isn't directed necessarily against Trump, although it's more very effectively directed against Trump ever getting reelected. And that is AOC's Alexa Ocasio-Cortez's comments that the border situation with the illegal immigrants is, she likens it to a concentration camp, saying perhaps the most dramatic thing that I've ever heard, that detainees in this area where we are perfectly within our right to detain them because of the rule of law, if they want to drink water, they're forced to drink it out of a toilet. Now, these allegations have all been refuted, denied, etc., by the people on the border. The woman who is in charge of the personnel who are basically holding these people just was livid, saying this is totally, totally untrue. And John Kennedy from Louisiana said, you know, Ocasio-Cortez knows better than to say something like that. I don't know. It's amazing to me what's going on. Mr. Phillip, you got the mic. What do you think about all of this? Do you see it as being a long-range plan to truly demolish the Republicans and Donald Trump?
I think it's an attempt to, and I'll tell you why. President Donald Trump, when he was running for office, said one of the most dangerous things any person could ever say, which was he said he wanted to drain the swamp. And when he said that, what that means is that every single corrupt individual in our government, every single agency that was weaponized illegally, right, under the Obama administration, which we saw, for example, how they went after the Tea Party, every single bit of corruption that exists, every office that has been corrupted, every individual who has been part of that system, Trump told them he's going to put them in prison, is what he did when he said that. And basically, if you tell people you're going to throw them in prison, and the only way they can avoid that is by preventing you from getting in a position where you can do that. They are going to fight for their lives, and they're going to do everything they can to stop you. And that was the message Trump sent to them before he took office. That was one of the messages he campaigned on. And so I think what you're seeing is a desperate campaign, step by step by step, to try to, you know, one, impeach Trump, prevent him from getting into office. Let's go back through some of the stages of this, right? They staged the whole fake Trump-Russia collusion scandal, whether you believe the whole narrative around whether he obstructed justice. I'll say that's, you know, nonsense. You can't obstruct a case if there was no crime, and it turned out there was no evidence that ever used to launch that. It's just a false narrative. Not only was it launched using no evidence, but it's coming out now that there's the whole Spygate scandal, which they're still calling a conspiracy theory, despite, I'd say, undeniable and very large amounts of evidence, publicly verifiable evidence, that the Obama administration used very unethical means to spy on Trump, to frame this whole thing, using opposition research from the paid for by the DNC and the Clinton campaign, hiring a foreign national, British citizen Christopher Steele, who's a former spy, who by his own admission collected the data from people in Russia. In other words, disinformation from Russia, by his admission, collected from individuals still active in the Kremlin, used to disrupt an election and used to launch a fake investigation into a presidential candidate, then into a sitting president, and even used in different ways to impact the midterm elections. Everything they're accusing Trump of, they've done. Every single thing every major scandal they've manufactured, it all gets proven false. But what they're doing is a classic, well, two things. One is disinformation. And what is disinformation? You alter the footnotes of an issue. You change the footnotes to alter the conclusion. And so they can create 1,000 lies and point to the 1,000 lies and draw a false narrative on it. And if you try to discredit that false narrative, they'll say, what about this? And they'll point to one of their half-truths and not give you a platform to explain how it's a lie. You see? And the effect of this, well, there's two things. One is I would call it a chaos operation. It is the daily, nonstop barrage of scandal after scandal. Every single tweet Trump sends is the, you know, most offensive thing they've ever seen. Every single issue he does is a doomed failure. And when it proves successful, they try to give it, you know, like Obama, you know, you remember when he said to Trump, you know, you want to have 3% GDP growth, you know, what magic wand do you have? Not an exact quote, but something along those lines. Trump exceeds 3% GDP growth, and then the media gives Obama the credit for it after Obama publicly declared that doing so would be impossible, right?
Mm-hmm.
They tried saying Trump was going to start a war with North Korea, and look, he's holding, you know, shaking hands with Kim Jong-un, and you know, becomes the first president to walk across the DMZ and you know, pass into Korea. You know, but despite you know, and where's ISIS? You could argue they're still somewhat around, but Trump using, you know, working with our military, working with guys on the ground who actually see what's taking place, just about wiped them out of the news. You could argue that they still have a small cell, but in terms of, you know, owning a state, that whole threat, which many people said was unsolvable, Trump solved it, you know, by working with U.S. partners. I mean, I could go on and on. The media does not give him credit for this. Instead, every single time he moves to do something, they make it into a scandal. And so people are constantly barraged with this illusion that the Trump presidency is weighed down by scandal after scandal after scandal and crisis after crisis after crisis, and made to look like nothing he does succeeds, because they don't give him credit for the things that they say won't succeed when it turns out they do succeed, which has been many, many times now, right? And so people, you know, and then they don't tell people when the narratives get proven false. And so people, they're using this Pavlov dog tactic to brainwash people. People are developing emotional memory. And the way this works is, you know, basically, of course, Pavlov, you know, this Soviet scientist, did this experiment where he takes dogs and he rings mm-hmm. a bell, and, you know, the dog you know, gives them food and the dog salivates. He eventually takes away the food, rings the bell, and the dog still salivates. Well, that's the exact method they're using on, you know, the Democrat base. They are agitating them emotionally every single day, so that the image, right, the food, right, is Trump. And the emotional reaction is outrage.
They truly are. Josh, we've got to take a real quick commercial break here. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to be back in 30 seconds. I'm going to continue this discussion with Joshua Philip. And we're going to give you a concrete example. Stick around 30 seconds. Okay, welcome back. Continuing my discussion with Joshua Philip. We are also wrapping up KER Politics here. We got about 9.5 minutes to talk about the subject that I find to be really interesting. Josh, you made a really good point when you talked about when you likened what's going on in American politics right now to the Pavlov theory that he proved with dogs. Well, here's what's going on right now. Let's just take one example. Let's forget at this moment in time, because there's definitely no conclusive proof in on the situation down in Mexico. So let's talk about what happened and that you wrote about in the article. Now, let me give you a preface. President Donald Trump is facing another wave of attacks from the big corporate media and the Democratic establishment. This time he's being accused of saying he would accept opposition research on a political opponent from a foreign country. You know, That is a true statement, but it leaves out a very, very important factor. And let me bring that up right now. Basically, he said, of course he would, but what he would do is he would then, if that information had anything to do with trying to rig elections, trying to whatever, you know, discredit political opponents, etc., he's on the record of saying he would turn that information immediately over to the FBI and they would take it from there. Let's talk about your story, Josh.
Right. So Trump did an interview. Basically, he was asked, you know, if a foreign national, you know, wanted to offer you information on a, or wanted to tell you information on a candidate, would you listen? Trump says, yeah, I'd listen. You know, and if I thought there was anything wrong, I'd alert the FBI. The media took that and ran with it, twisted it around, and suddenly, you know, then he, by the way, he used a fictional example saying, you know, if Norway, you know, wanted to warn me about someone, of course I'd listen. There's nothing wrong with listening. Media takes that, twisted around, suddenly says, Trump says he would accept opposition research and would not necessarily, or from a foreign government, it would not necessarily alert the FBI. He said he would alert the FBI if he thought there was something wrong with it. And he never said he would accept opposition research from a foreign government. Both of those statements were false. They were both half-truths, right? And then Trump clarifies it. He goes a bit further and he says, look, you know, I meet with foreign leaders all the time. If they tell me about someone, of course I'm going to listen. That doesn't hurt to listen. And the real irony of this, is, as I mentioned just before the break, this is exactly what the Democrats did when it came to the Steele dossier. Remember what happened with that. That was actual opposition research, right? They hired a company called Fusion GPS. It was the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee who paid for it. And Fusion GPS went and hired a foreign national, Christopher Steele, who then, by his admissions, if he's telling the truth, collected information from Russian individuals still active in the Kremlin, right? In other words, they bought opposition research. They paid for opposition research from a foreign national who collected it from Russian disinformation, right? From Russian individuals and disinformation, because all the major claims have been proven false. And the Mueller report, you know, showed that none of the claims in it were true. They used that to launch this entire Trump-Russia investigation. They use that to cross-corroborate information. They use that to, you know, cause chaos in the election. The things that they just accused Trump of doing, not only was it false, but they themselves actually committed the, say, scandalous element of those claims. Yeah. You see, and this is how they do it. It's all projection. They accuse you of doing what they do. Right.
You know, I got to tell you, Josh, I find this to be fascinating. I have never, I mean, I got a lot of years on you, my man, but I got to tell you, in the lot of years that I have on you, I thought I'd seen everything. Let me just alert our listeners here, read two short paragraphs from your article. Quote, Assistant Attorney General Stephen Boyd recently confirmed that the investigations into Spygate, or the scandal that helped manufacture the Trump-Russia collusion narrative, has expanded to include foreign intelligence agencies. We already know that the Democratic National Committee, Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign, and possibly the Obama administration manufactured the scandal with the help of former British spy Christopher Steele, who said he received information from Russian sources still active in the Kremlin. Another source in the scandal was Alexander Downer, a former Australian foreign minister, and it's possible others were involved. Boy, you don't see that as a headline in the New York Times or the Washington Post, do you, Josh?
No, you don't. And there were others involved as well, but we're kind of waiting for the full story to come out. It appears that they use the Five Eyes intelligence sharing, you know, system to even use foreign intelligence agencies to collect, you know, basically spy on the Trump campaign and do things that are illegal under the U.S. system, is what it seems happened. That is still being confirmed exactly how that played out. the current evidence, with the current evidence, it really seems that that's what happened. But we're kind of waiting to see where this goes still. But what we're witnessing is one of the biggest political scandals in U.S. history play out, and the media is not covering it. Not only are they not covering it, if you type in Spygate on Wikipedia, at least last time I checked just recently, it says that it is a Donald Trump conspiracy theory, which is absolute nonsense. You can, you know, Epoch Times, we published a full, we kind of did an unconventional investigative report. You're looking at it, the Spygate scandal is one that involves tons of individuals, you know, dozens of individuals, organizations, and so on. And many of the ways these individuals colluded in this scandal has many different threads. And to show people that, you know, you're going to tell them dozens of names, dozens of organizations, and so on, it gets really confusing. And so what we did was we came up with a new form of investigative reporting, which is we did a large infographic, a poster-sized infographic, which lays out the entire scandal. And that was accompanied by a very large investigative report, which explains how all these individuals were involved, how, you know, what exactly happened. All of the information we have there is public information. You can go and verify it yourself and check all of our facts yourself. This is absolutely not a conspiracy theory. It is verifiable information through the admissions of, you know, even a lot of the legacy news outlets, and also through you know, public reporting from, say, government documents and these kinds of things. It is absolutely verifiable.
You know, the only comment that I can make at this point, we got about 2.5 minutes left, or I should say about 1.5 minutes left here. The only comment that I can make here is the Epoch Times, with its circulation of about 11 million, to me is the only paper, the only print, and also obviously electronic source of information that I have ever seen that actually has taken Trump's side. Utilizing guys like yourself and some of the other people who go in in-depth research into all of this stuff. I mean, you know, how can any news outlet take this thing seriously about how Trump would use information from foreign countries if that would help him or another Republican win the election? Here's an exact quote showing the ridiculous nature of that from Donald Trump. I meet and talk to foreign governments every day. I just met with the Queen of England, the Prince of Wales, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, the Prime Minister of Ireland, the President of France, and the President of Poland. We talked about everything. Should I immediately call the FBI about these calls and meetings? How ridiculous. I would never be trusted again. With that being said, my full answer is rarely played by the what he calls the fake news media. Josh, I have to tell you, this is an incredibly interesting story, and the left has done such an effective job in my opinion, controlling the media, the major media, New York Times, Washington Post, the folks who are very avid, they call themselves progressives, are using the ploy of, look at us, poor us, we're the only segment of our society that cares at all about the downtrodden. They care at all about people who are willing to break the law. That's going to kill our country eventually if it doesn't stop. Josh, always a pleasure.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.